Hey, we're getting here on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Before we start today's daf, we're going to go through a major review of the dinim of Trumot and Masrot. And that is because it's very important to understand the dinim of Trumot and Masrot in order to grasp many of the sugyot that are going to be presented in today's daf. The first thing to be aware of is that Trumot and Masrot apply to vegetation. They apply to items that grow and are part of the agrarian cycle. There are certain items that are chayav midoraita. The Torah mentions Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzhar. Mentions three items that are chayav mina Torah in Trumot and Masrot. The first of which is dagan, which are the five species of grains that one can make matzah from, that can turn into chametz, that we make hamotzi on and mezonot on. Those five grains are chayav midoraita in Trumot and Masrot. Then there is tirosh and yitzhar. Tirosh refers to grapes and wine. Yitzhar refers to olives and olive oil. Those are also chayav in Trumot and Masrot, midoraita min haTorah. With regards to vegetables, it's clear the Gemara states in a number of places that Trumat Yerek is midrabanan, that it's only a rabbinic requirement to take off Trumot and Masrot from vegetables. With regards to fruits of the tree, there's a machloket Rishonim. The majority of Rishonim believe that fruits are only chayav midrabanan, similar to vegetables. Whereas there are some Rishonim that believe that fruits are also chayav midoraita or chayav min haTorah in Trumot and Masrot. Now what's important to understand with regards to Trumot and Masrot is that there is this 7-year cycle. We are today in Eretz Yisrael beginning the Shemitah year, which is the tail end of the mini cycle, which is the 7-year cycle. 7 of those cycles make up a Yovel. And so in this 7-year cycle, the last year is the Shemitah year. The first year, second year, fourth year, and the fifth year are what are called years of Maaser Sheni. In those years, you give all the matnonot, which begin with Bikurim, and then our Truma, Maaser Rishon, and Maaser Sheni. In the third and sixth year, instead of giving Maaser Sheni, one gives Maaser Ani. One of the questions one has to ask is, when you have vegetation or fruits that are growing in the field, which year does it belong to? So that's important in terms of one of the thresholds that is determinant for these items, which is called Onat HaMasrot, period of time when it reaches the point where it's quote-unquote chayav in Masrot. Somewhat of a misnomer because it's not really what creates the chiyuv in Trumot HaMasrot, but it's what determines which year that item belongs to. It is enumerated starting in the second Mishnah in the first parak of Masechet Maaser, where it says, Eimatai HaPirot Chayavim BeMasrot. And then it goes through all the different fruits, all the different vegetables and grains with regards to when is that threshold period. With regards to tvua, which is the grains, and with regards to legumes, the Mishnayot say over there that it's once they reach a third of their maturation. Now, what is the determining factor in terms of qualitatively what is that period of time or that threshold that is determined the Onat HaMasrot? The period of time when the item has matured sufficiently that b'shat hadchak, in extenuating circumstances, somebody would eat this item. And number two is, it's mature enough that if the seeds are taken from this item, if they're planted, that they would grow or that they would thrive and be able to produce more produce. So that's the threshold time of what's called Onat HaMasrot. It's very early on in the growing of the item. In terms of grains and legumes, as you mentioned, it's one-third of the maturation of the item. With regards to many of the fruits, it's something called Chanata, which is the point of time when the fruit emerges, the blossom, the fruit emerges on the tree. Now, when that happens, that is determinant with regards to which year that item belongs in. If that happened before Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, then it belongs to the previous year. If that threshold was met after Rosh Hashanah, then it belongs to the upcoming year. Now, with regards to fruit, there's a little bit of a nuance, which is that if the Chanata takes place before Tu Bishvat, then it belongs to the previous year. If the Chanata takes place after Tu Bishvat, then it belongs to the subsequent year. The truth is that that's really also using the threshold of Rosh Hashanah. It's just telling us that if the fruit was only chonet, blossomed or came onto the tree after Tu Bishvat, that means that it grew from the rains and the sustenance of the year after Tishrei, after Rosh Hashanah, and therefore belongs to the subsequent year. If it grew before that point in time, that means that it was sustained and it was fed by the previous year's rains, and therefore it belongs to the previous year. So that is, first of all, what's very important about the Onat HaMasrot, is which year do you belong to? Which year determines whether you are a Shemitah fruit, determines whether you are part of the year 1, 2, 4, and 5, where you'll have Maaser Rishon and Maaser Sheni taken off, or whether you belong to 3 and 6, where you'll have Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani taken off. So that's important. Number two is, You can only take off Tshuvot HaMasrot from each item within its contained year. You don't take off from one year to the next. So fruits that belong to one year don't get mixed with fruits that belong to another year. And so that's also important. The most important item with regards to Onat HaMasrot is that at that point in time, if someone is Mafrish Tshuvot HaMasrot, it is considered that they did take off the Tshuvot HaMasrot, even though that's not the way they should do it, and it's not the proper time to do it. But once you've crossed over that threshold, the item is quote-unquote chayav in Tshuvot HaMasrot, and if you take off or separate the at that point in time, it will be effective in terms of taking off the Tshuvot HaMasrot. Yet, still midoraita min haTorah, there's still no obligation to take off Tshuvot and Masrot. The next threshold that is mentioned, it's mentioned later on in that same perek, in the beginning of Masechet Masrot, in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Hay, where it says, Ezu garnan lemasrot. Why is it considered to be the goren for the Masrot? The goren is the threshing floor. It's a borrowed term because goren does not apply to all produce. It does apply to grains. And with regards to grains, there's a clear determination as to what's considered to be now the gemar melacha, which means the finalizing of the processing of that item. And with regards to grains, it's what's called miruach hakri, which means smoothing out the pile. It's after you've already processed the grains and got them to a point of a kernel where they're ready now to be milled. At that point in time, once you made them to a pile and you smooth over the pile, and all you have left now is the grain that you're going to use to mill, that's called the gemar melacha. And that is a significant, again, threshold with regards to Tshuvot and Masrot. Now, according to the Gemara in Baba Metzia, Daf Payizayin Amud Bet, that threshold of Gemar Malacha is not sufficient in and of itself in order to make you Chayav in Tshuvot and Masrot. What makes you really Chayav in Tshuvot and Masrot Midoraita is based on a memory of Rabbi Yanai. That's found in that Gemara in Baba Metzia, which is, in a tevel mitchayev v'maser, ad shireh pnei abayit, until it sees the face of the house. Shnemar, Biyarti HaKodesh min HaBayit, which is part of the wording in the Vidui Maser. And there it says that I removed all the Tshuvot HaMasrot from the house. So it speaks to the fact that min HaTorah, the most important threshold is the house, or entering into the house. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Af HaChatzer Chovat HaMaser. Also, the Chatzer has that same status. Shneamar, because he quotes the Pasuk as well, which is, V'achlu B'sharecha V'saveyu, that you eat it in your courtyards and you'll be satisfied. So again, there it sounds like there's a threshold of the chatzerot being something of significance that obligates one in Tshuvot HaMasrot. And that is true min haTorah. In order to be chayav in Tshuvot HaMasrot min haTorah, with regards to, again, Dagon, Tirosh, V'Tzar, which we know for sure are chayav in Tshuvot HaMasrot, first of all, you'd have to cross over the Onat HaMasrot to determine which year it belongs to and to know that it is chayav. Then after that item is processed to reach the point of Gemar Melacha, if it's then taken into the house to finish the processing and brought into the house, then that Riyat Pnei Abayit is what obligates one to give Tshuvot HaMasrot. Min haTorah, before that point in time, you can eat whatever you want from it, you can do whatever you want with it. It is not considered to be Chayav in Tshuvot HaMasrot until you have Riyat Pnei Abayit. Here, the Rabbanan entered and created other thresholds along the way, which stop people from just using whatever produce it was freely until it has Riyat Pnei Abayit. The first of those is Onat HaMasrot. Onat HaMasrot, which is again determinant as to which year the item belongs to, is also a trigger for a Din D'Rabbanan that from that point forward, one may only eat Achilat Arai from these items. One may only eat or partake in these items in a snack form, but not Achilat Keva. You can't have a full meal from these items that don't have Tshuvot and Masrot taken off of them. So that's one din midrabanan. The second din midrabanan is that if instead of wanting to bring them into the house, you want to sell them, you want to make it into a commercial product, and you're not going to use it for your own use or not for your own house, you're going to sell it out. So at the end of that Mishnah in Masrot, Perek Aleph Mishnah Hay, it says, Vamed Dvar Mimurim. When are these things considered to be the goren for maser, meaning the gemar melacha for Tshuvot HaMasrot? That's v'molich l'shuk. That's when you're taking them out to be sold in commercial venues for making money and not for your own purposes. V'molich l'beito. But if you're taking them into your own house, ochel mehem arai yad shu magil l'beito. Continue to eat them for snack-wise until you reach your house. And so what the Mishnah is indicating is that from the point in time of gemar melacha, technically, you haven't finished the processing of the item. You finished the agricultural processing of the item, but you still haven't brought it into the house yet. The fact that you haven't brought it into the house means that according to the Torah, you're not chayav in Tshuvot HaMasrot. The Rabbanan instituted that if you're not going to bring it into the house in the end, you're going to sell it in the market, then that item already triggers the chiyuv, the obligation of Trumot Masrot. That means once you've crossed over the Gemar Malacha, or the Gorin, as it's called in the Mishnah, then you're already chayav in Trumot Masrot, because you're never going to reach that next threshold. The person who buys it from you might reach that threshold, but you, as the person who produced this vegetation and is now going to sell it, will never reach that threshold. Never for you, that trigger for the chiyuv in Trumot Masrot is at the moment that you've done the Gemar Malacha, you finished processing it, and you made the decision that you're going to sell it. At that point, you become chayav in Trumot Masrot. Then you may not partake of that item at all, midrabanan. Not achilat keva, not a full meal, not achilat arai, not a snack. You have to take off Trumot Masrot before you're able to benefit from it. It's considered to be tevel before you remove the Trumot Masrot and asur to eat. Again, that's only true when you're selling it or you bring it to the marketplace. On the other hand, if you're bringing it into your house, there's still another delay before you become chayav in Trumot Masrot. And that is until you have riyat pnei abayit, until it's brought into the house, you will not be chayav in Trumot Masrot. Now, in terms of Gemar Malacha, once you reach that point of Gemar Malacha, you can take off Trumot Masrot and be considered a chatchila to take it off. We said bidyavad, you can already start taking it off from the point of time of Onat Masrot, but that's not the proper time to take it off. The proper time to take it off is when the item is finished and fully processed, and that's at the time of Gemar Malacha. But over there, once again, you can take it off and take it off the chatchila, but you're not obligated to take it off until you have riyat pnei abayit, until it's brought into the house. At that point, you come chayav midoraita in taking off Trumot Masrot. And because of that, there is, again, a postponement of the obligation to take off Trumot Masrot and what you can do with it. So again, we said before, from the time of Onat Masrot until Gemar Malacha, one is permitted to have achilat arai, to eat snacks from this fruit. Now, eating snacks from this fruit means for a person can take small quantities of it and eat it, as long as he's not making a suda out of it. And he can feed his animal as much as he wants, because animals eating is always considered to be achilat arai. If at that point he decides after the Gemar Malacha to sell it into the marketplace, then at that point he cannot eat achilat arai, cannot eat achilat keva, he must take off Trumot Masrot. If he intends to keep it for himself, then he has to bring it into his house, and when he brings it into his house, that's what will trigger the necessity to stop eating it achilat arai, to stop eating it in a snack form. The question of whether you can even get to a behemoth or not is somewhat questionable once you've already crossed over the Gemar Malacha as to whether you can have a achilat arai for a behemoth, or is only achilat arai for a dam at that point in time. But that will only be shut down, or that opportunity will be shut down once you hit the obligation midoraita of Trumot Masrot when you have riyat pnei abayit. Again, all of this is an institution de rabbonon to compel people to take off Trumot Masrot and to limit their utility from the item before it reaches the point where you're chayav midoraita in Trumot and Masrot. Now, with regards to riyat pnei abayit, it's not clear whether riyat pnei abayit is an obligation with regards to all items that are chayav in Trumot Masrot. Question the Gemara in Bava Metzia Peched Amud Bet asks, with regards to riyat pnei abayit, meitiv marzuta brei Rav Nachman, gorno lemaaser lechayav alav mishum tevel mishitigmar melachtan. When is something chayav because you ate it tevel because you didn't take off Trumot Masrot? That's when you have Gemar Malacha. Vezu Gemar Malachtan. What is considered to be the Gemar Malacha? Tana melechet chachnasatan. When you bring them in. So the Gemara thinks, what does it mean to bring them in? Maybe it brings in and gather them in the field. Gemara says, no. It's chachnasatam lebayit zeu Gemar Malachtan. So that's Rabbi Yanai's statement. And that makes broadly that any item that's chayav in Trumot Masrot, once you bring it into the house, that's when it becomes chayav in Trumot Masrot, midoraita, or that's when it gets a shem tevel min haTorah. Ibai Dema, there is an alternative answer. Ki amar Rabbi Yanai b'zeitim anavim, t'lav b'nei goin ninu. Riyat b'nei abayit is only relevant for items that are not grains. Alochitim v'sorim goren v'hedja k'tiv bay. The goren is mentioned specifically in the Torah that that's the obligation or the threshold of obligation. So those two answers that are given as to what is considered to be the threshold to make something into tevel actually have a nafkamina, because the Rishonim argue as to which one we paskin like. Do we paskin that everything after Gemar Malacha still requires Riyat Bnei Abayit until it's Chayav Midoraita in Trumot Masrot? Or is that only true with items that don't have a Gorin? Gorin is something that reaches the threshing floor, something that is prepared like Meruach HaKri with the grains, where you reach the full processing is done by the time you're finished in the field and bringing it to the house, is only a secondary item, it's not part of the processing. And because of that, that will be the end for them, the Gemar Malacha for them. With regards to Tirosh and Yitzhar, with regards to Yayin and Shemen, where they don't have a Gorin, then only once they're brought into the house will they be Chayav or have a Gemar Malacha. So that's a question if it applies to everything, or is Riyat B'nai Abayit only relevant for Tirosh and Yitzhar, items that don't have a Goren, things that are not grains? The Rambam paskins, like the first Lashon in the Gemara there, and he thinks that Riyat B'nai Abayit has broad application to all items, and nothing is Chayav Midoraita, and doesn't become Tevel until you have Riyat B'nai Abayit. And then the Ravid disagrees, and he paskins like the second Lashon in the Gemara, which is that with regards to Dagan, with regards to grains, they are Chayav in Trumot and Masrot and Tevel Midoraita, once they reach the Miruach HaKri, once they reach the Gemar Malacha, once they reach the Goren. On the other hand, with Tirosh and Yitzhar, there they only become Chayav Midoraita and have Tevel once they reach the Riyat Pnei Abayit. So that's the Ravid's view versus the Rambam's view. Now, with regards to what else is Koveya the Maaser, the Rambam quotes, and he's basing this on the Gemara in other places, that there are six items that trigger a Chiyuv, Trumot, and Masrot. Again, these are all Midrabanan, but any one of these items are something that will require you to take off Trumot and Masrot, where you can no longer eat from them, even Achilat Arai, even in a snack form, which we noted before, that the Rabbanan allowed you until you hit that Chiyuv Doraita, they allowed you to eat Achilat Arai. They prevented you from eating Achilat Keva, but they still allowed you to eat Achilat Arai until either you hit the threshold of where you want to sell it, or until you reach the threshold of bringing it into the house, where you're Chayav Midoraita. At that point, you can't even eat from Arai, you have to take off Trumot and Masrot. The Chachamim note that there are other items that can trigger that. It's the Rambam quotes in Perek Gimel from Hilchot Maaser, Halacha Gimel, Echad Mishishat Varim, Koveya Perot and Masrot. These trigger a necessity to separate out Trumot and Masrot. The first of which is HaChatzer, is reaching the courtyard. So not only reaching the Briat Pnei Abayit, but even the Chatzer. HaMekach, which you're getting noted that if you're going to sell it, a transaction is a trigger for a Chiyuv Trumot and Masrot, and it doesn't matter anymore whether it is reached that threshold point that is Midoraita. The Rabbanim force you at that point to take off Trumot and Masrot. HaEsh, fire, which means Bishul, cooking the item, that already, that type of processing of the item already triggers again the necessity to take off Trumot and Masrot. HaMelach, which is salt, which means that if it's kovesh, if one pickles it or salts it, that is also considered the equivalent of cooking it or processing it, and that would also trigger Trumot and Masrot. The other will be a Truma. If you separate off Truma from this item, that would be a trigger to require you to take off the remainder of whatever you have to take off in terms of Trumot and Masrot. And the last item is Shabbat. That Shabbat is automatically Koveya for Trumot and Masrot. There is no such thing as Achilat Arai on Shabbat, and therefore, if you have Shabbat, you must take off Trumot and Masrot in order to eat it on Shabbat. And if it hasn't had the Trumot and Masrot taken off of it, you can't eat it on Shabbat, you can't even snack on it on Shabbat, because Shabbat is Koveya. So those are six items that are considered to be a Gemar Melocha Midrabanan, which are again a Chatzer transaction, Bishul, Melach, which includes both Kovesh, Bechometz, and Salting, Truma, the Hafrashat Truma, and Shabbat. So those are all triggers Midrabanan. Now, the bigger problem that comes up, and this is going to be part of what we're going to discuss today, is what happens if you reach one of the thresholds out of order, and that is something that's discussed by the Gemara in a number of places throughout Shas, which is what happens if you have Riyat Pnei Abayit before you finish processing the item. So there's actually a three-way machloket in the Rishonim with regards to what is the standing of this item. So for instance, you haven't reached the point of Gemar Melacha, but you already brought it into the house. Now you're going to process it once it's in the house and reach Gemar Melacha after Riyat Pnei Abayit. So does the order make a difference? Or as long as you reach Gemar Melacha and Riyat Pnei Abayit, it's okay. So the sheet of the Rambam is that if you finish processing the item within the house, prospectively, once you reach the point of Gemar Melacha of Miruach HaKri in the house, that is going to be something that's going to be Chayav Midoraita in Trumot and Masrot, and that's because you've now met the qualifications of Riyat Pnei Abayit and Gemar Melacha. Yes, they're out of order, but that's not a problem. Even when they're out of order, as long as you cross both of those thresholds, you're Chayav Midoraita. On the other hand, there's the Shita of the Rabbeinu Ephraim, which is brought by the Balei HaTosafot, and is also found in one of the Shuta Rashba, which is that in order to be chayav in Trumot and Masrot Midoraito, one would have to take the items out of the house, process them, reach Gemar Melacha, and then bring them back into the house again. And that would be the only way that you'd be chayav Midoraito in Trumot and Masrot. Then there is the Shita of the Rabbeinu Shmuel. It's brought in the Ramban. It's also the Shita of Rashi in a number of places in Shas, which is that once the items have reached the house, had Riyat Pnei Abayit, they saw the house, and they were not Nigmar Malacha before they reached the house, Doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you take them out and process them again. It doesn't matter if you process them in the house. You'll never be chayav in trumot and masrot mi d'oraita because you have failed to do this in order. You need gemar malocha, then riyat b'nei abayit. If you do that out of order, then you don't have the requirement mi d'oraita of trumot and masrot. You will still be subject to all the dinim derabanan, which trigger the necessity for chiyuv trumot and masrot, but it also will allow you in the interim to eat achalit arai in order to snack on it, not have achilat keva, or possibly give it to your animals in the interim, because it does not have a chiyuv midoraita of trumot and masrot. That's actually a three-way machloket within the Rishonim, three different views as to what happens when you do this out of order. Okay, now all this is going to be important in today's Gemara, because we're going to see these types of scenarios where people do things either out of order, or they bring things into the house before they are fully processed and then process them in the house. What is the status of those items that are brought into the house and then processed? And so now we're going back to the Gemara. We'll just review quickly what's the question that the Gemara has over here. And that is at the bottom of Yud Bet Amud Bet. We had a question that was presented to Rava where he said that the halacha is with regards to processing certain items on Yom Tov that one is allowed to be molalim milalilot u'mefrachim kitni yom b'yom tov. One is allowed to roll or to process the grains on Yom Tov. Now, you can't process them in the normal way where you would thresh them and you would work them out in the fields and process them fully because it's Yom Tov. But you can do it in a somewhat unusual manner, which is do it by hand. And that if one rolls these items around, the ears of the grain together until the kernels come out, that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov. And you're allowed to also break or crush the pods of the legumes to release the legumes on Yom Tov. Abaye challenged that from a breita, which seems to indicate that you're allowed to do that on Erev Yom Tov, but you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. The Gemara concluded that you don't have to read the breita the way Abaye suggests, and that you can say that even though the breita says Erev Yom Tov, it would be equally true on Yom Tov itself, like Rava said. The Gemara then is left with a problem, which is that our Mishnah says that there is no way that you can separate off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. Whereas there are other matanot kuna which you can separate on Yom Tov, Trumot and Masrot are not taken off on Yom Tov. The problem with that is that now we have a breita that suggests that one can process certain items on Yom Tov according to Rova's reading of the breita. Now if you could process them on Yom Tov, which means the Chachamim allowed you to do this processing on Yom Tov, that means that those items become chayav in Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. Now the only way the Chachamim are going to allow you to process this on Yom Tov and then become chayav in Trumot and Masrot is if you can actually take off the Trumot and Masrot. Otherwise, it's a tircha, she'ena tzricha. It's doing extra work for no purpose because you can't get the benefit from them on Yom Tov. The heter to do work on Yom Tov is because it's ochel nefesh. You're going to get the benefit from it. You're going to be able to eat it. So if the Chachamim allowed you to process it in this manner, this unusual manner, on Yom Tov, that means that they think you're going to become chayav in Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov, and then you would be allowed to take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. And that's the Gemara's question now. We have a Mishnah saying that you don't have Trumot and Masrot taken off on Yom Tov. And now we have Rava, who has a breita, and the way he explains the breita indicates that you can take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. My answer is Lokasha, that's not a problem. Ha Rabbi, ha Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. That's a machloket between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Here it's also a machloket between Rashi and the Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim as to how to read this Gemara. Rashi believes that ha Rabbi, ha Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we have a breita. Hichnis shibolim lasot me'amisa. One brought in the stalks, meaning that this is the stalks with the grains in there, the whole ear of the grain that you're bringing in order to make them into dough. Ochel mehen arai. One can eat from them in a temporary fashion, a snacking way. Upatur. And one does not have to take off Trumot HaMasrot because you haven't reached the threshold of Gemar Melacha. This is, you have Ri'at Pnei Abayit, as we discussed earlier. You took it into the house, but it hasn't reached the threshold of Gemar Melacha. And because you intend to make it into dough, it will reach a point of Gemar Melacha. You're going to have to do all the agricultural processes until you reach the point of getting the kernels separated out so that you can mill them. So at that point, you will trigger the Chiyuv, whether that's only Midrabanan or Midoraita, has to do with the Machloket Rishonim that we discussed before, if you do things out of order. But at least in the interim, when you bring them into the house, you can continue to eat them arai, and your patur from Trumot. The molalam mimililot. If one brings them in with the intention of not processing them fully to use them to make dough, but rather to roll them and then eat the kernels themselves and to eat them in very small quantities, In that case, Rebbe Mechayev, Rebbe says, you cannot eat from them anymore, achilat arai, and you're obligated to take off chumot and masrof from them. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, poter. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're poter from chumot and masrof. Now, as Rashi explains, the machloket over here between them is that Rebbe is Mechayev and Truma, because you can't eat arai from them until you take off chumot and masrof. The fi, shahaknasatam bishibolim, hi gemar malachtan. That the bringing them in their stalks is the gemar malocha. Shein sofan lavodi de goren acher. There's no other final processing stage which they are going to reach. They are now reached a point at which you're going to process them, but they reach that threshold. They're not going to be made into a goren, into a threshing floor where they're going to be separated out and they're going to be processed in large quantities. You're only just going to roll them, take off the chaff and take those kernels and eat them. They're not going to go through a major amount of processing at this point, and therefore they've reached, according to him, the gemar malocha. Now, if they reach the gemar malocha and you have riyat pnei abayit, that's an obligation to take off trumot. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, degancha kitiv. It says, with regards to grains, what is the trigger to make you chayav in the gemar malocha? Dagan. And that is miruach. That is smoothing out the pile. Dein digun ele kibbutz bikri. The only time it's considered to be digun is when you pile them up in a pile and you make them into a pile of the processed amount, meaning that you do a significant amount, or at least enough of a quantity that it will be considered a pile. Now, according to this, whether you do that pile out in the field or in the house won't matter, but that's what will be the trigger for being chayav in truma, and that's when you bring them in to make an isa, to make dough from them, you will reach that threshold, and therefore you're going to be chayav when you reach that threshold. But when you bring them in the maleo mililot, when you're doing them in very small quantities, and you're never going to have a pile of them, that's going to be a digun or a goren, therefore you'll never reach the point of gemar malacha. And since you never reached the point of Gemar Malacha, you're not going to be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot. So that's Rashi's explanation for this machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rashi explains how do we understand the Gemara, which is that everybody agrees that you're allowed to be Molel Mililot on Yom Tov. The only question is, are you Chayav to take off Trumot and Masrot? And so the Mishnah that says that you're not Chayav to take off Trumot and Masrot, or you never take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov, it will be according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's position is that you can't become chayav in Trumot and Masrot from a Gemar Malacha that's dealing with Molel Mililot. Since you can't reach that threshold of being chayav in Truma, so you can do this avoda on Yom Tov, and you can eat them without taking off Trumot and Masrot. And that'll be the explanation of our Mishnah, which says there is no case where you take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. On the other hand, the Braita that suggests that you do take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov, the Braita explained by Rova, will be according to Rabbi, who says that when you're Molel Mililot, you're Chayav in Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, if you process them on Yom Tov, you're going to have to take off Trumot and Masrot. So that is the view of Rashi as to what the machloket between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi has to do with our Mishnah versus the Braita. And that's what the Gemara says, lo kasha. And then the Gemara says, wait a minute, ul Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, this is Rashi's girsa, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you're not chayav in Shumot Masrot, nami mishkachala, we can come up with a case where he will also agree that Shumot can be taken off on Yom Tov, kigon. He brings in the stalks with the grain in it in order to make them into a dough. As we saw at the beginning of the Braita before, when you do that, you will reach a point of Gemar Malacha later on, but in the interim, you haven't reached that threshold. So you're not Chayav in Trumot and Masrot now until you complete that Gemar Malacha. Then after he brought them in, he changed his mind. The Molulan, Yom Tov. He decided then to make them into mililot, to roll them and to process them in small quantities instead of holding them out to make a big dough. So then, tivla biyome, that made them into tevel on that day, and you will be chayav in truma. So it actually turns out to be something a little bit strange, which is that if you originally intended to bring them in from molel mililot, you will not be chayav in trumot masrot, because according to Rashi, in Rabbi Yosi bi Rabbi Yehuda, there was never any digun. There is no goren. Since you don't reach that threshold, you can't be chayav in trumot masrot because it never takes place when you're molel mililot. On the other hand, if you bring it in for an isa, for a dough, you won't reach that threshold right away, but when you do reach that threshold, you will be chayav in trumot masrot. So now what the Gemara is suggesting, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, if you bring it in for dough, and therefore there is going to be a Gemar Malacha, but that Gemar Malacha is just pushed out or is going to be later, then if you change your mind and make the Gemar Malacha happen right away, by meaning molel mililot, that will trigger a need to separate out Trumot and Masrot. Because when you brought them in such a fashion that they will turn into Tevel, and they will have a Gemar Melocha. So then when you change your mind and accelerate the Gemar Melocha by not doing it a full processing and doing Mirach HaKri, but simply doing Molel Milot, that accelerates the necessity for Trumot and Masrot, and you'll become Chayav and Trumot and Masrot, even according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. And if that's the case, then how does our Mishnah say that you don't take off Trumot on Yom Tov? Ella my Truma. So then what are we going to explain our Mishnah that you don't take off Truma on Yom Tov? Is Rov Truma. That's a majority of Truma. There might be some outlier cases, like this case that we just described for Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, where you will have to take off Trumot and Masrot, and maybe for Rabbi in a case where you are Molel Mililot. Those are unusual cases. The majority of cases, majority of circumstances, you will not take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov itself. And that's the way to explain the Mishnah versus the Braita. And even in the Mishnah, we're going to have to say that it's not an absolute statement that there's no Trumot. It means the majority of Trumot cannot be taken off on Yom Tov. There will be these unusual cases where you will have permission to take off Trumot and Masrot and Yom Tov. Now, that's the way Rashi explains it. The Bali and Tosafot are bothered by Rashi's explanation because it makes it sound like from Rashi's explanation that according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, when you do a molel mililot and your patur from Trumot and Masrot, that you can do whatever you want with the grains and you can eat them at any way, shape, or form. Tosafot is bothered by that because we don't find anybody who says that. Even if you don't believe that there is a Gemar Melocha after you have Geriat Pnei Abayit, or Molel Milot, it's not considered a Gemar Melocha, already as we noted before from the Onata Masrot, right, there's a Dinder Albona that you can only eat Achilat Arai. You can only eat snacks. You can't eat Achilat Keva. And so too over here, why should you be allowed to eat Achilat Keva? Why when he says Patur, does Rashi say you can do whatever you want with the grains? So that's the first problem Tosafot has with Rashi, because we don't find such a concept within Trumot Masrot. Already from way back at the Onata Masrot, you're already Asur and Achilat Keva. Why should that change when you have Molel Mililot? The Braita itself says, it's very clear that it's speaking about Achilat Arai and not Achilat Keva. And therefore he says he doesn't think that's the right explanation in Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Number two, he says, is that according to Rabbi, who says that Molel Mililot is considered to be the Goren, when you roll them, you rub them in your hands, and that is considered to be the finishing of the processing, at that point you'd be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, according to Rabbi, it's not when you do the actual Molel Mililot that you become Chayav in Trumot and Masrot, it's when you bring them into the house to be Molel Mililot. That's already their Goren, and that triggers the Chiyuv of Trumot and Masrot. Now, Tosafot points out, that could have happened yesterday. Who says that happened on Yom Tov itself? You're doing a Molel Mililot on Yom Tov, but according to Rabbi, when you bring it in to be Molel Mililot, you're already Chayav in Trumot and Masrot, and that's the Goren. And that could already have been triggered on Erev Yom Tov. And therefore, Lachein Nir Ali, Tosafot says, the Rabbeinu Chanano has a similar explanation. Many of the other Rishonim follow this view of the Bali of Tosafot. And obviously they have a slightly different gear, as we'll see in a second in the Gemara. And when it says here, Ha Rabbi, Ha Rabbi Yossi Yehuda, it's the opposite way around. Rabbi will be the author of our Mishnah. Rabbi will be the author of our Mishnah because according to Rabbi, you never have to take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov because you already became Chayav on Erev Yom Tov. If you're Chayav on Erev Yom Tov, you can't take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov itself. And therefore, according to Rabbi, the Mishnah is what says you can't take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov. That's because you already became Chayav on Erev Yom Tov. And since you were Chayav on Erev Yom Tov, you already took off the Trumot and Masrot. And if you didn't take them off, we're not going to let you take them off on Yom Tov if he didn't do it in Erev Yom Tov. And therefore, Rabbi is the author of our Mishnah. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, is the position which the Braita follows. The Braita that says you can take off Trumot and Masrot on Yom Tov, that's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, you were not Chayav in Trumot and Masrot on the previous day, because when you bring them in to be Molel Mimilot, you're still Patur mi Trumot and Masrot. Now, if you want to eat Achilat Keva, you're going to have to take off Trumot and Masrot. That only happens, or that Molel Mimilot only happens on Yom Tov itself. Then when he's Molel Mililot, that's what triggers the Chi of Trumot and Masrot, because at that point, if he wants to eat them, Bachilat Keva, he's going to have to take off Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, the Chi of Trumot and Masrot only came into existence on Yom Tov itself. That's what triggers the Chi of Trumot and Masrot, and allows you to do it on Yom Tov itself. And then when the Gemara says, Afilo, it's not Afilo the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, it's Afilo the Rabbi. Because Rashi changed the gears to say, the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Nami Mishkachadla. That's not the case. The Gemara is now saying, Ula Rabbi Nami Mishkachadla. We could have a case by Rabbi where it's also like that. Whereas, Hindichnis Shibolim Lasod Me'anisa. If he brought them in to make them into a dough, And when you bring them in to bake them into a dough, according to Rabbi, that's not the Gorin yet. The Gorin's only later on, once you process them and you put them into a pile, that will be the Gemar Melocha. Then you change your mind and you're Molel Melilot. So according to Rabbi now, you weren't Chayav on Erev Yom Tov when you brought them in because you still had more time until the Gemar Melocha. And all of a sudden on Yom Tov, you decide to roll them and use them Molel Melilot. That is a trigger as a Gemar Melocha now on Yom Tov itself. So even according to Rabbi, if you trigger that on Yom Tov, you can take off Trumot HaMasrot on Yom Tov. So even according to Rabbi, we'll have a case where you take off Trumot HaMasrot. How do I answer that with regards to the Mishnah? We'll say that it's Rov Truma and not all Truma that does not have Trumot HaMasrot taken off in Yom Tov. But there will be these exceptional cases. And that's the way the Baal Yitosafot read the Gemara, that the Rabbi's position is the one that is behind our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is behind the Braita. And then even according to Rabbi, we can come up a case where you would take off Shemot and Masrot on Yom Tov itself. So Abaye comes along and qualifies this machloket between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and says machloket b'shibolim. Their machloket is only when you bring them in the chef, meaning that you're talking about somebody who is bringing in grains. When you bring in grains and bring in the shibolim, that's where Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that there is no goren for these items unless you do miruach hakri, and therefore if you're molel mililot, there is no chiyuv Shemot and Masrot, because you haven't reached the point of Gemar Melocha. The normal way to process grains, when they're brought in their stalks, in their shibolim, is to make it into Meirach HaKri. If you don't do that, then you haven't reached Gemar Melocha, and you're not going to be Chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, Eliz Midoraita, and you will still be allowed to eat from the Machilat Arai. Aval Bikitniot, with regards to the Gyums, Diri HaKol, everybody agrees, Asuraita Tivla. Rashi before said, Chavilot Shel Chardal. Asuraita means that you're dealing with bundles of these items. When you bring them in bundles in their stalks, that is considered to be already tevel and a gemar melocha. And that is because, as Rashi points out, many people process legumes in much smaller quantities. They don't process them in a way where they're going to come up with a whole pile of them. They'll do just a little bit amount that they're going to put into whatever they're cooking right now, and that will be sufficient. So since that is a normal way to finish off or to process these items, when you bring them in to be processed in that way, that's already triggers the Gemara Melocha. If that's the case, you're going to be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot, even according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Lema Misayile, we have seemingly a Mishnah that supports this view of Abaye, that the position of Machloket between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi, is limited to grains and does not apply to legumes. Because Mishayelo Chavile Tiltan, one who has bundles of fenugreek, Shel Tevel, that is tevel, which means that it doesn't have Trumot HaMasrot taken off of it. Or is it kotesh? This person has to process them, he has to crush them. Umichashev. And then he calculates. Kamezer Yishbam, umafrish alazera. He figures out how much of the seed is there. The seed is the item that you want. The stalks are the discard. And therefore, when you calculate what you're going to give in terms of Trumot HaMasrot, you calculate it off the food substance, which is the zera, the seeds, and you calculate how much Trumot HaMasrot you're going to give, ignoring the stalks that come off of it. Veinu mafrish al eitz, but you don't take off Trumot HaMasrot from the stalks themselves. So my love, who is the author of this Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. It makes sense to say this is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Damar hatam lo tivla, hacha tivla. In the case of the grains, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's not tevel, and it's not a problem. That's what we saw before. If you bring them in to be molel mililot, the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says you are patur. But on the other hand, when it comes to chavile tiltan, since by legumes, by kidneyot, he believes that that is the normal way to process it. That's why they trigger a chiyuv tevel, and you would have to take off trumot and masrot. If it was Rabbi, then why would you just be speaking about legumes? He has this applied to everything. He thinks it applies even to grains. The fact that somebody specifies it by legumes makes it sound like they don't believe that's true by grains. They do believe it's true by legumes. And that would be Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's position. Gemara says, no, Rabbi. Gemara says, Rabbi, my iria tiltan. Afilu shibolim nami. Why are you focused on fenugreek? You could say this about anything that has a stalk on it. As we saw earlier in the Braita, that Rabbi believes that anything with a stalk, if you bring it in order to process it, b'mililot, that's considered to be a trigger for chiyuv trumot ha-masrot. Elamai. So what do you want to say? It's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. If it's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, lashmin an shar minei kitniot. Why is he focused on fenugreek? Why don't you focus on legumes? As Rashi points out, fenugreek is obvious that it is processed in very small quantities because it's used as a spice to spice a dish. And therefore, you're definitely going to do it in small quantities. So if you told me that kidney oat legumes, which are done in slightly bigger quantities, if they are triggered or considered to be chayav and shmot masrot when you bring them in, b'malel mililot, then certainly fenugreek would be that way. So kol shekein tiltan, then certainly fenugreek would be that case. Why would you specify tiltan, which is a lesser chiddush? Tell me about the kidney oat, which is a bigger chiddush, and I would have known fenugreek as well. So ela tiltan itzrichale. Now there is a chiddush in tiltan, and that is sakadat chamin. I would have thought hol v'tam etzol perio shaveh, since the stalk has the same flavor as the grain itself, as the seed itself, b'frosh nami etzol, you would have a requirement to take off trumot masrot even on the stalk. Kamash v'lan, that is not the case. So in that case, the author of that mishnah could be Rabbi. And why doesn't he mention shibolim, which is true of all shibolim? Because by fenugreek, you have to specify that it's only the seed or the fruit that is considered to have trumot masrot taken off of it, not the stalk itself. Same with Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Why not mention kidney oat instead of fenugreek? No, I'm mentioning fenugreek because it's a chiddush. But if that's the case, I have no proof to Abaye's position with regards to Rabbi Yehuda's position with kidney oat, because here we're talking about fenugreek, and even Rabbi could be the author of this mishnah, because there's a chiddush internally in fenugreek, which is the fact that you don't have to take off trumot masrot from the stalks. And that's enough of a chiddush to put it into mishnah by itself, and not be medayik anything from that, that something else is chayav, or something else is patur. Ikedamre. So now there's an alternative version of Abaye, which is Amar Abaye, machloket b'shibolim. The machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Reuda is by items that have stalks to them. Aval b'kitniot, with regards to legumes, divrei akol, that everybody agrees, asuraita lo tivla, that when you bring them in bundled, they don't become tevel, which is now Rashi says, the Gemara believes, that b'kitniot stam hachnasatam nemiruach, that the default status of bringing legumes in, and what normally people do is process them in large quantities, and therefore if they process them in large quantities, this would not be, even according to Rabbi, a trigger for be considered to be Gemar Melocha, and therefore you would not have to take off Trumot Masrot when you're Molel Mililot with regards to, and now the Gemara asks from that Breita that they tried to bring a proof to Abaye in the previous Lashon, or here they try to bring the Breita as a dismissal of this position. Meitve, Mishal Oyelo Chavile Tiltan Shel Tevel, or is it Kotesh? Someone has these bundles of fenugreek that are Tevel, he has to crush them up. Mechashev, then he calculates Kama Zera, how much he has in terms of seeds, Yeshvam u'mafrish ala zera, and he separates out Trumot Masrot from the seeds, Veinu mafrish ala eitz, he doesn't take it off from the stalks. My love, what's this situation here? Tevel tvul shel truma. Talking about something that's tevel because it has to have Trumot Masrot taken off of it. It makes it sound like there's a mishnah with a Tano who believes that when it comes to legumes or tiltan, that you have to take off Trumot Masrot even when you're molel mililot. So Gemara says, lo, it's not tevel for truma, it's tevel tavul shel trumat maser. It's tevel for trumat maser, meaning that this is maaser rishon that the levi was given by the Yisrael, and he has to separate out from this maaser rishon trumat maser, a tenth of his tenth he has to give to the kohen, which is trumat maser. So for the trumat maser, that's what it's tevel for. Ukud Rabbi Boam Rabbi Shimon Lakish, like the view of Rabbi Boam Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Damer Rabbi Boam Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Maaser Rishon Shikdimo B'Shibolim. If the Levi takes Maaser Rishon when it's still in the stalks, Shmo Tovlo L'Trumat Maaser, despite the fact that it's too early and it's before the time that you're supposed to give Trumot and Masrot, nevertheless, since the Levi took it or the Yisrael gave it to him at that point in time, he is obligated now to give Trumat Maaser. Even though you haven't reached the threshold point for Truma, nevertheless you have to give it because it says that you have to rotu menu maser mina maser. You have to take off a maser from maser. So if you already have maser, we'll see on the second half of today's daf, that already triggers the need for mina maser, to take off another tenth from that and give it to the kohen. So then, kotesh lamali. Why does he have to process it then? It's one thing if you're talking about Yisrael that's giving it to the kohen, we require that the Yisrael gives a finished product to the kohen or to the levi when he gives his trumot maserot. But over here, when the levi got it from the Yisrael in this form, why does he have to be kodesh? Just like they gave it to me, the Yisrael gave it to me in the stalks, I'm going to give it to you in the stalks. Why do I have to process it? I didn't get it processed. You don't get it processed. So either Levi could say to the coin, the same way I got it, I'll give you the tenth, the same way that I received it. So Amarava Knossa, it's a fine on the Levi. It's a fine on the Levi for taking the Maaser Rishon early. Now, there could be a fine because he took it before the time that it was chayav in Trumot and Masrot, and he shouldn't have done that. And the way that Rashi formulates it is because he's Mishanes Seder Masrot, he changed the order where the Truman Masrot are given, and that's over Belav, that's a Lav Do'oraito of Mleatcha B'dimacha Lo Ta'acher. He caused the Israel to put the Maser Rishon out before the Truma, and that's problematic. That's a violation to Oraita, even though it's before the Chiyuv of Masrot and Trumot, because you haven't reached Gemar Malacha. Nevertheless, Rashi believes that's still a violation, and because he caused that violation, we're now going to be Kones him to have to process this item and bring it to Gemar Malacha in order to quasi-compensate for the fact that he caused this problem for the Israel to violate the restriction to Oraita of the necessity to give Truma before Maaser. And that's why there is a fine over here, and therefore we compel him to deal with that. Or it could be because he's cheating out the Kohen. The Kohen is actually going to lose out in his Truma because the Levi took his Maaser Rishon early, and we'll see that in the second half of today's daf, why that happens and what the calculation for that is. So Tanya Nami Ochi of a Braita that supports that. Ben Levi should not lolo b'shibolim b'masrotav. If a Ben Levi was given his Maaser Rishon when it was still in the stalks, before there was a Chiyuv Matrumot to Masrot, again, it's after Onata Masrot. So if you give it b'diavad, it works, but it's not at the point where you've triggered the Chiyuv of Trumat Masrot, which is after Gemar Malacha, or after Ripiyat Pnei Abayit. So it was done before those periods of time. Oseotan Goren, he has to make them into a threshing floor. If it was grains, he has to process them and do Mirach HaKri. Anavim, if it was grapes that were given to him, Oseotam Yain, he has to process them until they're wine. Zeitim, if it was given to olives, Oseotam Shemen, he has to give them Shemen, Mafrish Alem Trumat Maser, and then only after he's processed it, Notan the Kohen. Does he have to give it to the Kohen as Trumat Maser? And the reason for that is, Kashem Shetrumat Dolak, and then he telleth, Elam, Min HaGoren, Umin HaYakev, just like Trumat Gedolak can only be taken from finished products, which means the Goren, the threshing floor, where it's been fully processed, the grain, or Yakev, is from the wine press. Kach Trumat Maser. Trumat Maser has that same requirement that any tellet them in a Goren or in a Yokev. It has to be given from something that is a finished product. And so therefore over here, the Levi who took it early, and that's the Tevel that we're speaking about in the Fenugreek over here, it's Tevel because it was given in its stalks to the Levi as Maaser Rishon, and now he has an obligation to give Trumat Maser. If he doesn't take off the Trumat Maser, he is eating Truma, which has a Chiyuv Mita associated with it. So that obligation to take off the Trumat Maser, according to Rashi, is Midoraita, is Minatorah. There are others that say that's part of the fine, and the fine is that he has to take off the Trumat Maser, and therefore it would only be a rabbinic requirement to take off the Trumat Maser, and he obviously would not be Chayav Mita, he'd only get Makat Mardot, which is what the Rambam suggests. Nevertheless, there is a requirement that the Levi process the item before he gives it, and that's because Trumat Maser has a Hekesh, as we'll see in a second, to Trumat Gedola. And just like Trumat Gedolah is only given in its fully processed state to the Kohen when you take off Trumat to Masrot, and that's when the Chiyuv Trumat to Masrot kicks in after Gemar Malacha, so too for the Levi who took it early in the Shibolim, he has to bring it to that point of Gemar Malacha in order to give it properly to the Kohen, the Trumat Maser, and therefore we obligate him to process it in order to give it, even though he could make the claim that I got it this way, I can give it to you this way. We don't allow him to make that claim, we penalize him, and we force him to give the Trumat Maser as a finished product. If that's the case, then that the Mishnah by the Fenugreek has nothing to do with our argument between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Reb Yehuda, because over there you're talking about something that's Tevel for Trumat Masrot, regular Trumat Masrot. Fenugreek story is a case about Maaser Rishon that was given to the Levi that's now Tevel for Trumat Maser. That's a totally different category, and therefore it's not a question on Abaye's position. The problem that the Baye Tosafot raised over here is that you have two Lishonot and Abaye. And the two Lishonot and Abaye are the exact opposite. And Tosfot says, we find many places in Shas where you have an alternate Lashon. You have an Ibayetema, Ikedamre, you have alternate Lishonot. When you have an alternate Lashon, generally there's a nuanced difference between them. You never find in Shas that you have an Ikedamre or an Ibayetema where one position is the exact opposite of the other position. And that's what you have here. Not only is it just one position opposite, the exact opposite of the other position, it's also something that's empirical. It doesn't even seem to be a halachic question. It's an empirical question as to what people do with legumes. According to the first version in Abaye, legumes people process in small quantities and put into their kedera. And therefore, when everybody's going to agree that when you're molel melilot, you bring them in to process them in those small quantities, it's already a gemar malacha and you're chayav in shemot masrot, even according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. That's the first version of Abaye. The second version of Abaye, the assumption or the presumption is that when people bring in legumes, they only process them in large quantities. They only make them into a goren. And since they make them into a goren, if you bring them in to be molel vilot, even Rabbi will agree that you're not chayav in shmot masrot. So you have a situation in which Abaye's statement is the exact opposite in the two lishonot. In one case, he's saying legumes are processed in small quantities, and everybody agrees they're chayav in shmot masrot. In the second lashon, he says they're only processed in large quantities, and therefore everybody agrees they're not chayav in shmot masrot when you bring them in for molel mililot. So Tosva tries to narrow down the machloket by saying that there are actually three or four different scenarios over here, and therefore this statement of Abaye is about one of those scenarios and has implication about the other scenarios, but it's still very difficult. Even with Tosva's answer, you really have two lishonot that are, again, one opposite of the other. And more importantly, they're one opposite of the other about something that's an empirical, a mitziut question, not a halachic question. The Chazon Ish over here has an interesting way to explain the difference between the two lishonot, in which it makes it that it's much more of a nuanced difference rather than a difference of opposites.
And he offers two explanations for what the machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda is that would then be impactful on the difference between two lishonot of Abaye. The first way that the Chazon Ish offers is that the machlok here is about derech achila, and the question is, what do we focus on, what's called normal or derech achila? Do we focus on the processing, it's a normal processing, or do we focus on what's the normal way to consume the item? And that might be the difference between the two lishonot of Abaye, and also be the difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda in their machloket. The other way he explains it is that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi are arguing about whether the Baalim have the ability to determine what's considered a Gemara Melacha. Is everything determined by default or by what the rove of people do? Or can the Baalim introduce a subjective Gemara Melacha if they believe that that is the Gemara Melacha? That will be the machlok between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi. And that will also then help to narrow down the difference between the first Lashon and the second Lashon in Abaye as to what impact the Baalim can have in these situations, because the expression what is normal is different in each of those cases.
Michashev, it says in the Mishnah we brought before with the fenugreek that he has to calculate what the amount is. Ha medida boy. Why is he estimating what he has to take off if he actually needs to measure it? Trumat maser is 10% of the maser rishon. 10% of the 10%. It's a very exact number, and it can be measured. It can be weighed. It can be done volumetrically. It can be taken care of in a very exact measurement. Why is the Mishnah telling you to be mechashev, to figure it out or estimate what the number is? Ha mani. So who's the author of that Mishnah? Abba Elazar ben Gimel. So Abba Elazar ben Gimel has an unusual opinion. He, Tanya, you have a bright thought. Omer, v'nechshav lachem trumatchem. It says, v'nechshav lachem trumatchem in plural. V'shtei trumot ha-katuv medaber. The pasuk speaking about two different types of truma. Achat truma gdola, v'achat trumat maser. This is what we noted before, that there's a hekesh between truma gdola and trumat maser. That hekesh already was brought into force, as we saw before, that just like by Trumat Gdola, you have to give from the finished product, so to the Trumat Maser from the Levi has to be given in its finished form. And now, Elazar ben Gimel takes it a step further and says, Kashem she Trumat Gdola nitelet ba'omed u'machshava, just like Trumat Gdola can be taken by estimation and by machshava. The way Rashi explains, omed means that you can do it by estimate because there is no shiur for Trumat Gdola to be taken off. Since there's no shiur for Trumat Gdola, you can take off on an estimated amount. Now the Chachamim imposed that if you want to give nicely, it's 1/40. If you're a Benoni, 1/50. If you're not so nice, you're a little miserly, 1/60. But those are all rabbinic impositions. And the Chachamim allowed you to do it, Be'omed. They allowed you to do it in a inexact way because there's no real measurement midorait. Never, whatever number you're giving is just really an estimated number. It doesn't have to be a fixed number. Bakshava, Rashi says, is that you're allowed to, or you're able to separate out the Trumat Masro with actually physically separating them. You can simply do it by having thoughts that I want the southern side to be Truma, or I want the eastern side to be Maaser Rishon, and you can separate them out just by Makshava. So just like that's true by Truma Gdola, Kach Trumat Maser, same thing is true by Trumat Maser, Nitel Me'umed Ube Makshava. You can take it off in that same fashion in estimation, and be Makshava, and without actually articulating or actually separating out the item. As Tosva points out, and Rashi makes the same comment, that with regards to the machshava part of this, that's already learned in the pasuk. It says v'nechshav lachem shumatchem. So you don't need a hekesh to teach you that. It's already built in the pasuk, and therefore that's not the chiddush of Rabbi Elazar ben Gimel. That's a limud from the pasuk that nechshav applies to both trumat maser and to trumat gdola. The chiddush is that limud about the omed, that just like trumat gdola can be given by estimation, so too Trumat Maaser can be given by estimation. The question as to why that is that we want you to give it by estimation, does that mean, some of the Rishonim believe, that you have the right to do it but not the obligation to give it Bo'omid? And therefore, it just says that if you do it that way, it's okay, but not that it's the way you should do it. The way you really should do it is by measurement. Or is it actually an obligation to give it Bo'omid? Is it an obligation to give it an estimation? And that, the Baal Tosafot in other places suggests that people in general, in order to be sure that they don't underpay, will give a little bit more. They'll be more generous with regards to giving, and therefore, Bo'omid is considered to be a better way of giving because then they'll be more generous in their giving. Now, while that works by Trumah Gedolah, that's less likely to be a good answer by Trumat Maser, because by Trumat Maser, if you give too much, it can't be made into Trumah. And if you give too little, then you've underpaid what you were obligated to pay. By Trumah Gedolah, where there's no fixed amount that you have to give, and if you overestimate, it's fine, because it all becomes Trumah, and it's not a problem. So therefore, it leaves you with a little bit of a question mark of exactly how this Omid works by Trumat Maser.
In order to deal with that, the Baalei HaTosafot actually bifurcate the din and say that when it comes to Trumah Gedolah, Omid is lechatchila, that we want you to do it in an estimated way, because that way you'll give more. On the other hand, when it comes to Trumat Maser, yes, Omid is permitted, but it is not lechatchila. The better way to do it is by a measured manner. But on the other hand, b'diavad, if you did it through Omid, it will be acceptable. And therefore he says the Hekesh works to say Omid works by both of them, but it functions differently in each one of them, each one according to what is proper Trumah Gedolah, where an estimation is to the benefit, and by Trumat Maaser, where the Omid is okay, but not the best way to do it. That's the way Tosfot explains it in a number of places in Shas and Gittin, in Bechorot and Menachot. On the other hand, the Ramban in Gittin, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, suggests that the Hekesh is only for Dinim Deoraita and not Dinim Derabanan. And the idea that the Hafrasha is Mi'omed is Raka Din Derabonon. And therefore the Hekesh doesn't apply to it, or it doesn't have implications, and that's how he avoids the problem of moving over Omid from Trumat Gedolah to Trumat Maser, where it doesn't make so much sense.
And the different ways to read it will have impact on what the Chachamim will argue on Abelazar ben Gimel think.
The majority of the Rishonim believe that
Omid, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Gimel, is an obligation, then the Chachamim might agree that you could be do it by Omid, you just don't think it's an obligation. If you do it by Diavad, it works, but the better way to do it is to measure it. If you believe that Rabbi Elazar ben Gimel thinks that that's only you have permission to do it, but you don't have to do it that way, the better way to do it is by measurement, then the Chachamim will believe that you can't do it at all by Omid. And that's the Mishnah in Avot, Rabbi Gamliel's statement in the first paragraph, Mishnah Tetzayin. Al taver laser umadot. Person should not take off his masrot by estimation, but rather do it in an exact manner. That Mishnah will fall in that position of the Chachamim that says that you can't do it, or it's improper to do it that way. And that is a machlok of Yishonim as to what the Chachamim's position is versus that of Abelazar ben Gimel. Gufa, Amar Rabbi Bo, Rabbi Shimon Lakish. So we're going back to that statement of Rabbi Bo in the name of Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Maaser Rishon Shikdimo B'Shibalim. If the Levi received the Maaser Rishon when it was still in the stalks before it reached the point of Gemar Melacha, Shmo Tovlo L'Trumat Maaser. Its name makes it into Tevel for Trumat Maaser. My time out. What's the reason? Amar Rava Ho'il V'Yatzalav Shem Maaser. Because it now has a Shem Maaser. To which the Rashbo says, I'm not sure what Rava added that we didn't already know from what that statement was before. Shmo Tovlo makes it make sense that once you call it Maaser Rishon, the Maaser Rishon has a demand that Trumat Maaser be taken from it. So what the Chiddush is according to Rashi is that basically what is the Pasuk that you learn that from? V'harimotem limenu Maaser mina Maaser. Rashi says, Shemenikra Maaser, once it's called Maaser, it's now Zakuk l'Trumah. And so what the Chiddush is, according to Rashi, is that the Pasuk says that the trigger for Trumat Maaser is not Dagan or Digun, like it is by regular Trumat Gedolah, and therefore the only Chiyuv of Trumat Gedolah is after you have Gemar Melocha and possibly Riyat Pnei Abayit, whereas by Trumat Maaser, the trigger is Maaser, because it doesn't call it Dagan or Dagancha, it calls it Maaser Mina Maaser. So once it gets a Shem Maaser, it has a Chiyuv. And according to Rashi, it seems that this is a Din Do'oraita, that this Maaser Rishon is Tevel from Trumat Maaser min HaTorah. And if someone would eat it, they'd be Chayav Mita Bidei Shemaim, because it's real Tevel min HaTorah. The other hand, the Rambam says that the Chiyuv over here is only a Chiyuv mid Rabbanan, because he only says that you get Makat Mardut if you eat this Tevel. And therefore, the Rambam sees this simply as an Asmachta min HaKroh, wrote to me, Maaser mina Maaser, and that's the Chiddush of Rav over here. which is that the Chachamim instituted a requirement of Tumat Maser being taken off right when it becomes Maser and not waiting until the Meruach, because they didn't want people to be Mezalzel in Maser Rishon, and that's the Chiddush. Now, there is a major nafkamina then between Rashi and the Rambam, and that is based on the upcoming Gemara, which says that one is not Chayav for Tumat Gedolah and Tumat Maser at the same time, as long as it's an early enough period, if it's before Miruach, before the completion or the Gemara Melacha. According to Rashi over here, the Maaser Rishon is Tevel for Trumat Maaser, the obligation in the Torah for Trumat Maaser exists already. And then if the Levi goes and makes it into Miruach HaKri, finishes off this Maaser Rishon and does the Gemara Melacha, he then will become Chayav in Trumat Gdolah, and that's a separate obligation, because the obligation for Trumat Maaser already pre-existed, and now he's creating an obligation for Trumat Gdolah, and the Levi would be chayav in that case to give Trumah Gedolah after he processes it. That might relate back to the Knas that we mentioned before with regards to the Levi that has to be Koteshit. Rashi did not explain over there that the Knas is to make up for the loss that the Kohen sustained with Trumah Gedolah. And that's because according to Rashi, in the end, this Levi is going to have to pay the Trumah Gedolah and the Trumat Maser. So there is really no loss sustained by the Levi. And therefore, the Knas, as Rashi says on Yud Gimel and Aleph, is related to the fact that he was Mishaneh, the Seder of Masrot, and he's over the law of putting Mleyatcha B'dimacha, Lo Te'acher, giving Maaser Rishon before Truma, and that's the nature of the Knas over here. Again, it's a violation Do'oraita, and there is now, according to Rashi, a Chiyuv, Trumat Maaser, Mi Do'oraita, and the Knas is that he has to be Gomer before he gives it to the Kohen, and that'll also trigger the necessity for Truma Gedolah, and in that way the Kohen will not be shortchanged. And that's why Rashi says the problem that triggers the Knas is the change in the order of the Maser and the Truma, which also is interesting because that shows you that that Issur applies even before there's a Gemar Malacha, even before there's a Chiyuv obligation to pay the Trumot and Masrot. On the other hand, according to the Rambam, where the Maser Rishon is only Chayav and Trumat Maser Mi Derabanan, and that only once you reach Miruach, the Gemar Malacha, is there a Chiyuv Trumat Maser, at that point when the Levi does the Miruach HaKri, reaches the Gemar Malacha, at that same moment, devolves upon him the chiyuv of Trumat Maser and Trumat Gedolah at the same time. And we are going to say in the upcoming Gemara that when you have both of them devolve at the same time, then you can't have both of them be chayav, and you're only chayav in Trumat Maser, not Trumat Gedolah. And therefore, according to the Rambam, the Levi then only would be chayav to pay the Trumat Maser, and therefore the Knas clearly is not to force him to then pay Trumat Gedolah, but the Knas is to force him to have to process it and bring it to the Gemara Melacha, which is then the compensation for the loss that the Kohen sustains now where he's not going to get his Trumah Gedolah. And now the Gemara continues with a Gemara that we've seen in many places in Shas, and that is another statement here by Reish Lakish. Amar Reish Lakish, Maaser Rishon Shekdimo B'Shibalim. So again here, the Levi took the Maaser Rishon too early. He took it before it reached the Chiyuv Maaser. Again, it was at a time period where if you gave it B'diavad, it works, because it was after Onata Maserot, but it was still before Gemara Melacha, and therefore you were not Chayav in Trumot the Masrot. And in this situation, they took in the Shibalim, it's obvious Israel did not give Trumah Gedolah yet, because Trumah Gedolah is only triggered by the Gemara Melacha. So over there he's Patur mi Trumah Gedolah. The Levi doesn't have to pay Trumah Gedolah. Shenemar, and this is what we noted before, Rumotim mimenu Trumat Hashem Maaser min Maaser. Maaser min Maaser amarti lecha. You have to pay Trumat Maaser velo Trumah Gedolah, u Trumat Maaser min Maaser. It says you only have to pay 1/10 of the Maaser Rishon, not 1/10 of the Maaser Rishon, and also the Trumah Gedolah from the Maaser Rishon. You can only have one Trumah that you're Chayav, and that's the Trumat Maaser. The Trumah Gedolah goes by the wayside, and the Kohen loses out in that case. Because in a normal scenario where you have a grain that makes up 100% of the Tevel here, at first you would take off the Trumah Gedolah and give it to the Kohen, which is 2% or 1/50th of it. 2% would be given to the Kohen. Then from the remaining 98% that's left, you would take off Maaser Rishon, which is 10% of 98%, which is 9.8%. Of that 9.8%, 10% of that goes to the Kohen, and that 9.8% times 10% is 0.98%. That means in total, the Kohen gets 2.98%, 2% from the Trumah Gedolah, 0.98% from the Trumat Maaser. And the remainder then of the Maaser Rishon stays with the Levi, which is the 8.82% after you've taken off the 0.98 for the Kohen. On the other hand, where the Levi goes and takes the Maaser Rishon and takes in the Shibolim, then it's 100% of the Tevel here, 10% of that is given to the Levi. So now he gets Maaser Rishon, that's 10%. Of that 10%, he takes off 10% and gives that to the Kohen, which is 1% of Trumat Maaser. And then the remaining 9% remains with the Levi, and that's the Maaser Rishon. Then only then, later on, will the Balabait, the Israel, take off the Truma Gdola. At that point, there will only be 90% of the grain left, because 10% was already given to Maaser Rishon. He'll give 2% of that to the Kohen. So 2% of the 90% that's left is 1.8%. And he gets the 1% of Trumat Maaser. So that leaves him with a total of 2.8% that goes to the Kohen and 9% to the Levi. So you see in the case where he takes it early in the Shibalim, the Kohen loses out, because the Kohen only gets 2.8% of the total grain in that case, as opposed to 2.98% if it's done properly. And the Levi gets, in this case, 9%. Instead of if it was done properly, you'd only get 8.82%. So he is benefiting from taking it b'shibolim. And that's what Maaser Rishon Shekdimu b'shibolim. That's why the Levi wants to do it, benefits from it, and why we might possibly be kones, then we might find him to deal with it in that situation and get to a gemar melacha, because of the loss that he's causing to the Kohen. I have a chart that I put together and I'll send out that you can then see this pictorially, make it easier for you to understand. Why is it when he only takes it in the shibolim, when he takes it in the stalks, do we say then he only pays Trumat Maaser the Levi and not Trumat Gdola? What happens if he does it after there's already a Gemar Melocha? So there too, it should be that he only has to pay Trumat Maaser and not Trumat Gdola. So Malay Alecha Makra, but you, the Pasuk says, Mikol Matnot Dechem Tarimu Et Kol Trumat Hashem. From all your gifts, you have to take off all the Trumot Hashem. All the Trumot Hashem means both Trumat Maaser and Trumat Gdola. And the Gemara asks, my Reita, how do you know which is which? You have one Pasuk that tells you you only take off Trumat Maaser and not Trumat Gdola. You have another Pasuk that tells you you take off Trumat Gdola and Trumat Maaser. So you're suggesting now, well, the one in the Shibolim, when he takes it early on, that's where he only has to pay Trumat Maaser and not Trumat Gdola. If he takes it after Gemar Melocha, he has to pay both the Trumat Gdola and the Trumat Maaser, the Levi, from the Maaser Rishon that he received. How do you know that that's the logic that dictates over here? So Gemara answers, Hai Idgan, Hai Lo Idgan. It's very simple. It's whether the grain already is Chayab and Truma or not. In the case of the Kri, where there's a Gemar Melocha, it's already Chayab and Truma. So when it's already Chayab and Truma, then when the Levi takes his Maaser Rishon, he's taking Maaser Rishon with an embedded Chiyuv of Truma Gedola. Therefore, he has to pay both the Trumat Maaser and the Trumat Gdola, and that will even it out, because the extra Trumat Gdola that he takes off of that Maaser Rishon that he took the 10% from will rebalance the scales that the Kohen will get 2.98% and Levi only 8.82%, and it'll bring it back to the previous scenario as to what they would have been the case had this individual done it properly. On the other hand, if it's done b'shibolim, lo idgan, you haven't reached the Chiyuv of Trumat Gdola yet, and since you haven't reached the Chiyuv of Trumat Gdola, you only have an obligation of Trumat Maaser, not of Trumat Gdola, because the Pasuk says you only pay one Truma, not two Trumot. Now, what's strange about this, and Rashi says, Ma Ra'ita, is how do you know that that's the right way to say it? Why don't you say just the opposite? And Tosafot says, what do you mean? What do you mean say just the opposite? How could you say just the opposite? It makes no sense. If you say that the opposite is true, what that, when you take it in the Shibolim, you have to pay Trumat Maaser and Trumat Gdola, and then if you take it in the Kri, you only have to pay Trumat Maaser. First of all, what happened to that Chiyuv of Truma Gdola? And what type of logic would dictate that you'd be Chayav more before the Chiyuv Truma devolves, and you'd be Chayav less once the Chiyuv Truma devolves? So Tosfot offers a different possibility as to what the Maraita is, though the Ritva in Eruvin has one suggestion that the question is Maraita is, where in the Psukim do you find this distinction that you're making between the Kri and the Shibolim? And that's Maraita. Or he brings from the Tosfot Shas the possibility that there is a logic to flip this. And that is because if the Levi comes and is Makdim in the Shibolim, he knows for sure that the Balabait didn't give Trumat Gdola yet, because it's too early. And therefore the Maaser Rishon would be Chayab both in Trumat Gdola and Trumat Maaser. That would be the logic. Whereas when he gets it later on after the Kri, he would think that the Balabait already gave the Trumat Gdola. And therefore when he's given the Maaser Rishon, maybe he only has to take off Trumat Maaser. In that case, you can say Maraita. You could flip the logic to say that maybe you have to pay both when it is b'shibolim, and you only have to pay one when it's after the Kri. And that's where the Gemara comes and answers that Hadidgan, Halayidgan. No, there's a distinction that makes it clear why Trumat Gdola is Chayav after Gemar Melocha, and not Chayav prior to Gemar Melocha. But in that way, you can explain Maraita being just the opposite. How do you know not to say the opposite? There is a logic to say it the opposite way. Tanana Otam, we have a Mishnah in Masrot that says, a Mekalef Seorim, someone who's taking the husks off the barley or is shelling the barley, Mekalef Achat Achat, He again shelled them one by one, vochel, and then popped them into his mouth. Vim kalaf v'natan l'toch yodo. On the other hand, if he does a number of them and collects them in his hand, chayav, then he is chayav. Rashi claims over here he is chayav because he created a keva, and this is an achilat keva then, and not achilat arai. Tosafot disagrees with that and says that it's not the reason over here, but rather the reason is because he creates a gemar melocha. By putting a bunch into his hand, he creates a goren, and that simulation of the goren is what creates a gemar melocha, and that's the trigger for the chiyuv, trumot, and masrot over here. Now, Rashi says that this situation is a case where he is popping them out, the kernels, out of the shibolim, out of their shafts, or out of their heads. Tosafot is bothered by that because in the end of yesterday's daf, we said that you're allowed to be molel mililot on Erev Shabbat. You're allowed to roll the items in your hands to take off the shaft and the chaff and keep the kernels only on Erev Shabbat, but on Shabbat itself you can't do it. So Tosafot wants to make a distinction between whether you're taking them out of the shibolim or whether you are shelling them, which is that in the case before where you're not allowed to do it on Shabbat, that's where you're taking the kernels out of the stalks. That's not allowed on Shabbat because that's a toldav dash of threshing, and that's not permitted on Shabbat. On the other hand, once they already removed from the stalk before Shabbat, and now they just have their outer husk on them, that to roll them and remove them would be permitted on Shabbat. And therefore, the Tosafot thinks the scenario is not where you're taking out of the stalk, but rather a case where they're already out of the stalk and you're trying to take the shells off. Amar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar says about that Mishnah of Echen LeShabbat, that this din is true by Shabbat, that meaning that if you do them one at a time, you're allowed to do that on Shabbat and would not be considered a malacha. But then if you take them and then you start collecting them in your hand, that would be classified as a malacha, and it would be mifarek or a toldo of dash, and you'd be chayav for it. As opposed to where you do it one at a time, where Rashi says it's kala achar yadhu. It's a shinui, and that shinui makes it that you're not going to be chayav for doing it because it's not considered a toda of dash. Gemara says, "Ini v'ha rav mekalfale debitu kase kase." Didn't Rav's wife shell numerous sorim for him and put them into cupfuls? Cupfuls of these kernels that have been husked. The Rav Chia mekalfale debitu, and Rav Chia similarly, his wife did shelling of these kernels, kase kase, and placed tons of them into a cup. So that's the exact opposite of what Rabbi Elazar says, where it's problematic on Shabbat. Here they're doing exactly what Rabbi Elazar claims is problematic. Ela itmar, aseifa itmar. If you want to say v'chein l'Shabbat with regards to Rabbi Elazar's qualification, that's on the latter half of that Mishnah, not the beginning of the Mishnah, which is the latter half of the Mishnah, which we saw before, is hamolel mililot shel chitim, someone who's rolling the kernels of the chitim to take the out of their shaft, their stalk, and get the kernels to be independent. Minapeach al yad al yad. He's allowed to blow them or do that in small quantities, vochel, and then he can eat it. Vimnapach venatan l'toch cheko. If he does it one at a time and then collects them in his waistband, chayav. Then he's chayav because again, the same what we said before, which is that he created a goren, which is a gemar melacha, which is going to be chayav him in Trumot and Masrot. Amar Rabbi Elazar, and then Rabbi Elazar comes along and says, V'chein l'Shabbat. That's the same din for Shabbat over there, that if you process them one at a time, it's okay. But if you process them and then collect them, then it's going to be problematic. Matkiv lo Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, V'reisha l'maser in l'Shabbat lo. So Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel says, now you're telling me based on this, that in the Reisha, the din only applies to Masrot, but does not apply to Shabbat. That means with regards to Maser, it'll be considered a gemar melocha when you collect them. You shell a bunch of them and then collect them. That'll be considered a gemar melocha for Trumot Masrot. But for Shabbat, that will not be considered a gemar melocha or to be considered a melocha at all. Shabbat gemar melocha gemar melocha. Is it possible that Shabbat is the kula? That meaning that something for Shabbat is not classified as a gemar melocha, yet for Maser it would be classified as a gemar melocha. So how can you say that the Reisha is not qualified by Rabbi Elazar's statement? So Rav Shesh Rav Yidi challenges the challenge and says, "Velo, is that not the case? Vaha gornan the maser. When it comes to making the goren of the maser, this is the Mishnah that we talked about in our introduction and the Gemara in Bav Metzia Pechet Amud Bet that in Masrot Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey over there it says what's considered to be gemar melocha. The Tanan Ezu gornan the maser a kishuim vadiluim mishi paksu." When it comes to gourds, zucchinis, and cucumbers, the gemar melach for them is when they're
the flower that's on the top of them dries up or withers. Mishalopaksu, and those types of vegetation or vegetables that don't have the flower that dries up, mishyamid areima, once you pile them up. Vitnan nami gabe bitzalim, and we have a similar Mishnah with regards to onions, mishyamid areima. When you make them into a pile, that's what makes the gemar malocha. Vilu gabe shabbat hamadat amareima patur. When you make a little pile of vegetables in the house, that's considered to be patur. As Rashi says over here, leinyan shabbat, mishyavid bitzalim debeito. When it comes to Shabbat, and you bring them into the house, the onions, ein hamadat areima malocha, making them into a pile is no longer considered to be a malocha. If you did it out in the field, it might be considered a malocha. But once you bring them into the house, that's not considered to be a malocha. Yet, with regards to Shuma and Maaser, that is considered to be a gemar malocha when you make it into a pile of bitzalim. So you see that there is a distinction between what's classified as a gemar malocha for Shumot and Masot, and what's going to be a gemar malocha for Shabbat. So how do you explain that difference? Elamayit chala meimar, what are you going to say? Melechet makshevet asrat Torah. Hachanami melechet makshevet asrat Torah. The reason that there's a distinction over there is by Shabbat, you're only asur when you do melechet makshevet. As Rashi claims over here, it's a requirement of melechet umanut. It has to be something that is a professional type of work, asrat Torah, because of the smichut aparshiot between melechet amishkan and the Yisra Malacha on Shabbat, which says that only something that's Melechet Machshevet, Masei Uman, that is a craftsman type of work. Other ways that Rishonim formulated is that it has to be something that is creative Melacha, or a processing of an item that takes it to a different stage. So therefore, the standard or the threshold for something to be Gemar Malacha on Shabbat is much higher. Over here, by Trumot and Masrot, the Gemar Malacha is once you pile it up, once the flower withers. Those are thresholds that are meaningful within Trumot and Masrot. With regards to Melechet Makshevet, that's not avoda of an uman. That's not creative melacha. The drying up of the flour happens by itself. The arima is a small pile. Even a balabite can put that together. That's not a significant action that is considered to be a processing of the item. But it is sufficient to be gemar malocha for Trumot and Masrot. And so there is a distinction. And Shabbat and Trumot and Masrot will not always be equated. And therefore, the Chen LeShabbat of Rabbi Elazar does not apply to the Reish of the Mishnah, only to the Seif of the Mishnah. And also, by the case of the Chiyuv Masrot, what's considered to be a Goren, what's considered to be the Gemar Malocha, over there, certain of those things will be a Gemar Malocha for Trumot Masrot, but will not be a Gemar Malocha for Shabbat. That's because Shabbat requires Melechet Mashevet to be Chayav, and those items, or those thresholds, don't meet that requirement of Melechet Machshevet. Rabbeinu Chananel here has a slightly different explanation and girsa in the Gemara. The last line of the Rabbeinu Chananel, it says, Elo b'Shabbat, melechet makshevet asrat Torah, v'lo mikavin lefkusei mishum melocha elachshuri uchla. The popping off of the dried out flour on the top of the cucumber, the gourd, or the zucchini is only done to prepare the item to be ready to be eaten. It's part of the process of making it into an ochel. It is not a malocha that you're doing. On the other hand, for Trumot and Masrot, it will have significance because we have to reach a point of a goren where you have gemar malocha. And gemar malocha means that you finished the processing of this item to make it into a food. And here, that's significant with regards to Trumot and Masrot. With regards to Shabbat, you need to do malocha in order to be chayav. And popping off the flour is not considered to be malocha, but rather hechsher of the ochel, which is something that's permitted on Shabbat, because it's a part and parcel of the beginning of the usage of this item, or the eating of this item. And this really argues on Rashi, maybe on a number of fronts, one of which is maybe they believe that making arema on Shabbat is a malocha, and therefore they don't focus on that as they being the distinction between Shabbat and the Masrot. Number two is that they speak about the pikus, removing the flour, the fine hair, that is on the cucumber or on the zucchini, as being something that's done actively by the individual who's cleaning them off, not something that just dries off and falls off by itself. So according to Rashi, fell off by itself, so that's not a significant action that you can compare, whereas according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, you're actually actively removing it, and that's why it's something that can be compared or contrasted with that which happens in Masrot to that which happens in Shabbat. So now the Gemara asks, Ketzad Molel, how do you do this rolling of the grains to separate the chaff from the kernel? And Rashi and Tosfot point out this is talking about Yom Tov and not Shabbat. On Shabbat, we already said before that Molel Mililot is problematic. So this is Molel Mililot on Yom Tov. And the question is, as according to Rashi says, is you can't do it in the regular manner. You need some sort of shinoi, otherwise it'll be Uvda Dechol.
So what is the shinu that we require? So Baye Mishmei the Rav Yosef Amar Chado Achado. The way Rashi reads it is that you roll one finger, the thumb, against the pointer finger. You roll it between two fingers. Rav Avya Mishmei the Rav Yosef Amar Chado Atarte. You can roll the thumb against your middle finger and your pointer finger. You can use two fingers. Rav Amar came into Mishani. Since you're doing something different than normal, Afilu Chado Kulu Nami. If you're running your thumb against your whole hand, that's already considered to be a shinui, and that's enough to make it into something that's permitted on Yom Tov, because that's not the way that it's done during the weekday. Because the regular way to do Milila is to run both hands over each other fully, and here you're doing it in a shinui by doing it with one hand, and using the thumb to rub against that hand, that's already considered to be a shinui that would be permissible. That's the sheet of Rashi and Tosafot, although there are other Rishonim like the Ra'ah and the Me'iri, who suggest that the questions with regards to Shabbat and Yom Tov, you can do Molel Mililot in any way you want, in regular fashion. You don't have to do any Shinoi. Questions on Shabbat, is there a way to do Molel Mililot with Shinoi that would be permitted on Shabbat? Now the Gemara continues, Ketza min apeach. We said before that you're allowed to blow on Shabbat and Yom Tov. As Rashi points out, the Braita said that Ketza min apeach lemachar, min apeach miyad liyad b'Shabbat. You're allowed to do it from hand to hand. And by Yom Tov, it said, Minapeach al yad, that you're allowed to do it in small quantities. And therefore, Balei Tosafot and Rashi seem to indicate that when it comes to Minapeach on Yom Tov, there you don't require any shinui, because there you're even allowed to use the knon, which was the funnel or the tamchoy or a plate. You can't just use big sizes to make quantities that would be more than you need on Yom Tov, but you can even use a kli to do it on Yom Tov. So the question of Ketza Minapeach is on Shabbat, we have to do it through a shinui. What is the shinui that is required? He has to stick the kernels and the chaff in between his fingers, and then he blows on his fingers, and that blows away the discard that he wants to get rid of. So, and Eretz Yisrael, they laughed at that suggestion. Since he's doing it in a different way than normal, why is it that he has to put it all the way up in his fingers? He can do it in the regular palm of his hand, or anywhere in his hand, because that's already a change from the normal way that you do it. You can blow with his one hand, with all his strength. One way to explain that is that you blow with all your strength into the one hand, that's already considered to be a shinui, and that's okay. Or that you take your one hand and you shake it back and forth, you can move it, and that'll create the airflow that gets rid of the chaff. And that might be driven by the fact that both the Rabbeinu Hananel and the Aruch in the Gemara and Shabbat say that if you blow the grains with the discard that's in there to separate away the chaff from the kernels, that is considered to be Zorei LaRuach, or at least the Tolada of Zorei LaRuach, and would be considered a full-fledged Melacha. And therefore, when you say you can do it with your hand, it doesn't mean blow into your hand with your mouth, but rather simply move your hand around to create airflow that will cause or simulate the Zorei LaRuach. What winnowing would do to get rid of that lighter discard and keep the kernels. But since it's done derech shinui, it would be permitted on Shabbat. We're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph.